doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329, during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to A Good Football Show. I am your host, Patrick Daugherty, here today with Kyle Dvorchik and Patrick Corain, where we will be previewing seven of Week 18's biggest games. The biggest game, gotta be in a relative term in this case. Got some real stinkers this week, folks. But we will be talking about the 49ers at the Rams, the Broncos hosting the Chiefs, et cetera, et cetera. You guys are all hardcore listeners. You're probably gonna have questions about each and every game, so we're gonna break them down still this week. Going to get a stat or two of the week, maybe from Crane. I don't know. Are we, Pat?
Yeah, I got one.
All right, good. And we're going to try it. I was going to say we do not dive into every fantasy relevant player, but you guys know the deal. Most of you aren't really playing redraft in week 18. Maybe some in points only leagues. Maybe this year some people went to 2 week finals. Still have the DFS though. You're all still football fanatics. So hopefully it's still an illuminating, enlightening show. I don't really have any pre-show banter taped. Denny and I just talked about Joe Judge for like 9 minutes yesterday. I'm assuming you guys have both been calling. Well, Crane, you're already in New York. You just like get on the bridge, head over to Jersey, and just beg to play for Joe Judge and the New York Giants. Is that kind of how it works?
Apparently, all the Giants guys were late to practice today because of the icy, snowy conditions. So, no, I'm going nowhere near bridges in New York right now.
Well, you know he's cutting all of them. That's what you do. Bill Belichick actually would like still fine you, even if there was a blizzard. I think there's a few famous stories of Bill Belichick fining people, even though they're like, I didn't want to die on the highway in my Subaru. And, you know, he doesn't care about that. And
yeah, they didn't want to win is what it sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. You need to sleep at the team facility.
Pat, I was hoping you were going to say like, oh, you guys are all football fanatics, football warthogs, football senators, commanders. Does anyone have any preference on what the Washington team is? I kind of think it's cheeky to just have a Washington football team. I'm going to kind of miss it.
I am too. I thought it was definitely to the point where they had accidentally stumbled into like a good, funny new identity. Yeah. And they needed to get rid of like the clip art logo. Like the W has always bothered me.
Generic
W. It's like literally clip art. It's really, really, it's like the lowest rent team logo I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, speaking of low rent, their stadium falling apart is like super emblematic of this.
Yeah, it only worked because the franchise itself was in shambles, right? So as that franchise, you don't want to have that be your identity. You know, it's like it's working because everything else is such a disaster.
No, I think it was funny because, yeah, it's like such different nomenclature. It's just so unique. And I mean, I have people
for a reason.
That's true. Like, I've had so many people tweet at me over the years, like, stop saying football team. Like, you know, just I just refer to them constantly. It's like capital letter F football, capital T team. And that was bothering a lot of their fans for a while. I'm like, that's literally what they're called. I don't know what you want me to do.
Like, yeah. Pat, I think both of us like having a passing interest in like soccer, like, you know, European soccer also makes us like comfortable with this.
Yeah.
Because, you know, everyone is FC, or in the US we get SC as well. So I think
I've never liked that about European soccer. And even when the teams that do have names, like Tottenham, right? They're Tottenham Hotspur. Yeah. But they don't say Hotspurs. They're not the Hotspurs. They're Tottenham Hotspur.
Hotspur.
It's like a singular thing. It doesn't have their whole approach to team names is completely different. Mm-hmm.
Not a big Stanford Cardinal fan either, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Curious. No,
yeah.
Thought you were smart. Thought you would like Stanford.
I'm out. I'm out on this coastal Cardinal.
No, I like the really cheeky European style naming conventions, but I don't like when we try to force it in America because it's just like the ultimate, like we're trying too hard. Like, sorry, like Salt Lake City FC.
No, SC is even worse. The fact that we also have two American.
Well, a lot of them still do club. FC too, though. Some of them do SC, like you said.
SC is worse because it's like, yeah, it's so square peg round hole, because not only is it like trying to force this European style, it's like, but we still have to burgerize it by putting an SC in front of it instead of FC.
I'm just like, this is America. Just like accept, it's kind of lame, except the fact that in America, it's city name and then terrible mascot, terrible team name, whatever. Yeah. We're not cool enough to be the St. Louis Football Club, and we never will be. And we just need to accept that. But yeah, whatever team name Washington chooses is clearly just going to be outright terrible. I think Commanders, I think, is like the...
Commanders is a betting favorite, is what I saw.
My goodness. Wasn't there a guy who bought up all of the names? He bought up all the website names and is like sitting on them. Is that like changing the options, changing the betting odds?
Well, they said that all the fans wanted Red Wolves, and that one's pretty shaky, I must admit myself. Yeah, but they said they like openly said there was some trademark reason they couldn't do it. I don't think it was because it probably wasn't just this guy buying websites. I did hear about
that. He might have bought trademarks too or something.
There's like laws against squatting on domain names that you don't actually plan on using, I think. So that guy, like, he's probably trying to say, he's like, no, I'll do it for $500. I'll do it for a ticket to a week 17 game. I swear you can have it.
And like, it is tricky though. It can be, I mean, the Cleveland Indians, when they changed the name to the Cleveland Guardians, got in like a huge legal battle with a local roller derby team, because this is America. We have laws. They had the name trademarked Cleveland Guardians. So even the Major League Cleveland baseball team had to play ball.
Could they not Google that? Like, I get that the roller derby team or whatever wouldn't come up instantly, but
yeah, it wasn't on the first page, Kyle.
But the thing is, you can just put quotes around something in Google and it will only show those results. You don't have to be a wizard to know this. Or you could just click the number 2 at the bottom of a Google page to find the second set of listings on Google.
No, I'm not a legal scholar, but I think if something's not on the first page of Google, it should not exist legally.
Ooh, yeah, well, that explains your dislike of Stanford, you non-legal scholar.
Yeah, you're never going to make it through Stanford law at this point, Crane. But yeah, I mean, just to be a Cleveland, Washington is, they're just going to have the worst name ever. Let's just accept that now. It's going to be the worst name in the history of America.
I'm looking forward to it.
I am too, actually. Yeah, it's going to be great.
It's gonna be awesome.
Are we gonna have to undo a whole year of abbreviating them as WFP? Yes. Though, like, that is maybe the worst part about this is they will get probably another, or they'll at least go back to, I assume, WAS as their
WFT is a lot and better than WAS too. It's way better.
Well, you know, ESPN uses WSH
Wash,
which I don't know who.
That's borderline.
Yeah, they just went real off the rails.
That's
there.
Borderline.
Real. Guys, no, I'm sorry I'm going to get canceled for this, but this is that's real wishful thinking, if you ask me.
That's borderline. Wash is borderline. But I guess that does it for today's show, actually. We're not going to preview anything now. We begin in Denver, where PointsBet has the road-tripping Chiefs operating as 10-point favorites as they ready for the postseason. Crane, the Chiefs lost in rather dramatic fashion to the Bengals last week, snapping an 8-game winning streak that was largely built on the back of a soft schedule, but there were some good wins mixed in there. And as I've been saying all year, good teams beat bad teams, but definitely kind of a wake-up call for the Chiefs with the postseason on the horizon. And was this just a speed bump, or was this the sign of trouble ahead for the Chiefs?
I think it was a speed bump. You still had Mahomes playing very efficiently, and they were in this weird situation where, like, if the Chiefs had played a little bit more conservatively, maybe they don't wake up the sleeping Joe Burrow giant, because, you know, that's been the whole issue with the Bengals, is that they've been, you know, they've not been excited to unleash Burrow unless they've been pushed.
The word you were looking for was cowardly.
Yeah, it was.
Let's just say they spent a lot of time exploring some IGP Ryan futures in the middle of the season.
Yes, they sure did, as we'll get to on the Bengals preview. But if they had, you know, if they'd been a little bit more conservative, maybe they don't get Joe Burrow going off against them. If the Bengals are coached by maybe more, even someone a little bit more conservative, like if they have like a Troy Aikman type as their coach, they're not going for it on fourth down, which is, you know, what ultimately leads to them. They get a penalty, then they're able to kneel on it. They're able to set up for the game-winning field goal. They make the game-winning field goal. And as a result, the Chiefs don't see the ball in that game for the final 6 minutes, like 6 minutes and 1 second. It was kind of crazy. Like you generally don't see that. So, you know, deprived of a potential comeback game-winning drive, Mahomes' numbers look down. But I think, you know, against many other teams in this league and in many other situations, it just kind of lined up to where, you know, they get that penalty on fourth down. You could have had Mahomes coming down, getting the game winner himself. Now we're all excited about the Chiefs.
And yeah, and you know, it's the NFL. You don't go crying about the referees at home, but the Chiefs were on the receiving end of some pretty dubious calls in that game, I must say. And I thought they were a little right to be upset about the officiating. It was a rather poorly officiated game. I guess that hasn't been anything new this year. Or either that or the refs are better than ever. And since they're better than ever, we like highlight every last mistake.
That's so optimistic. Yeah,
I mean, it's probably the case that they're both terrible and better than ever. NFL refereeing, but
wasn't a ref taken to the sidelines and evaluated for an injury at the best?
That happens weirdly often. I don't know if that happened in week 17. But I agree with you, Pat. I think it was mostly just a speed bump. The Chiefs came out really hot in that game. I mean, you know, they hadn't lost in 2 months. You know, you usually lose at least once every 2 months in the NFL, and pretty poorly timed for the Chiefs because now they're kind of out of the mix for the number one seed. But I think, yeah, is this a speed? I guess the team, an ascending Bengals team, like you said, who we're going to talk about later in the show. But I mean, Kyle, did you see anything to take away, or are you mostly with the Pats that we're not all that worried about the Chiefs?
Yeah, Pat pointed out Mahomes, he had his third highest 8 out of the year, which is interesting. Highest big-time throw rate per PFF, and he was the number 6 passer graded by PFF on the week. It was just, you know, they got Ja'Marr Chase, and as good as Ja'Marr Chase is, that's going to happen. They still put points on the board. Mahomes looked fine, so speed bump, totally agree.
Ja'Marr Chase, I should probably save this for the Bengals section, but the Bengals are resting their starters. Ja'Marr Chase became the first rookie in NFL history to have two 200-yard games in the same season. So
he's only like the fourth or fifth player to ever do that.
Yeah.
You're not.
Yeah. So pretty special talent we got there.
Now he drops the ball.
He's no Penny Sewell.
Yeah. I mean, wow. So you want to talk about some fateful media reports, by the way. The Ja'Marr Chase drop reports from August probably changed fantasy history for a lot of people.
Has anyone done it? And I took that personally, Ja'Marr Chase meme, just like his game logs after that.
Oh, that's, you should do that. I was giddy drafting Ja'Marr Chase at like a full round and a half discount in August and September. And I honestly was not giddy enough. I should have been more excited.
I never wavered in my belief that he was the best receiver prospect since Amari Cooper. And now that's like unfair to Ja'Marr Chase to compare him to Amari Cooper, because Amari's a very good NFL player. He's never had an NFL season anywhere like this. But we will, again, we're going to talk about the Bengals later. So should probably stop talking about the Bengals. I mean, the Chiefs, how should we even approach this show? I mean, Chiefs DFS plays.
Yeah, the Chiefs are going to play. They're like very live to get the first seed. I mean, they need the upset of Houston over Tennessee, which is, it's not very good to happen. But teams will treat that as if
it's not impossible yet. I don't know why I just cut you off, Kyle. It is a big lift, but the Texans have looked like the team. They're an any given Sunday team at this point.
Yeah, they're squirrely. They're squirrely for sure. And Davis Mills is playing like okay. He's not awful. He's not like Zach Wilson, frankly. Like, you know, Trevor Lawrence. He's actually looked like the best among the rookies, frankly. So they're live to get this win. I don't think they will, but the Chiefs will play it as if they very much have a chance, which they do, to take that first seed. So they're not going to take their foot off the gas. And the Broncos, they're probably missing like multiple starting corners. Both Darby and Sertan Fangio called highly questionable. So this looks like a team that could be beaten up quite easily. And the Chiefs are incentivized to at least get the win.
Just two things. One, you said best among the rookies. I assume you mean best among the rookies, not named Mac Jones, because we just forget about Mac Jones. That's just how
that's true. We kind of do.
But the other thing
you're actually 100% right that I was just like, oh yeah, the guy who hands off in New England, whatever.
the other thing is,
so you're totally right.
Is everyone should check out Kyle's Week 18 NFL Motivation Tracker article that's on the site, because it's been hugely, hugely helpful as I'm writing up the walkthrough this week. And it's going to be just helpful in everything you do, just figuring out which of these teams are actually going to play their starters, which ones want to pull their starters, which guys are going to be going all out.
As a bit, I think I'm going to start doing this next year as well. Like, I don't know, man. The Jets don't look very good. It's week one, but I don't think they're very motivated.
That's great, dude. You should do it every week.
Start doing it every week.
The Jets just low motivation every week.
Motivation. Yeah, very important shout out from Crane. And the final note in the Chiefs, too, the game is on Saturday. So it's not like they're going to be scoreboard watching or anything.
Yeah, that's exactly why they do. There's no way they know anything. They don't have any prior information.
And like, you know, the normal course of action, 10-point favorites against the Broncos, even in like week 10, that could result in some starters being rested. But yeah, no different than a normal regular season game for the Chiefs. On the other side of the ball, we've got a 2-game slump for the Broncos backfield, which is all we really care about right now with the Broncos, since Teddy Bridgewater is officially out. He's sent to injured reserve with his concussion on Wednesday. It's another Drew Lock game. You know, Drew Locke's box scores don't look terrible in a vacuum, but Drew Lock is clearly not threatening defenses, which is allowing defenses to camp out on the Broncos' backfield. And they faced two really poor run defenses back-to-back in the Raiders and Chargers, and it's resulted in 17 carries for 39 yards for Melvin Gordon and 21 carries for 42 yards for Javonte Williams. You know, Mr. Big Play, Javonte Williams. Clearly the offense is being hampered severely by Drew Lock. And what are our thoughts on a Broncos backfield bounce back? Against the Chiefs team, it's not like they're like a bad run defense, but they are, they've been more gettable on the ground than through the air.
Yeah, it's like you said, two slumping games and coincidentally two Drew Lock starts, and you pointed out exactly why. Drew Lock hasn't been terrible, but you're just not afraid when Drew Lock takes over under center. And now he's dealing with a shoulder injury as well. He's supposed to play through it, and it didn't look to affect him last week, but it's not good for a quarterback who's already not the most accurate to then be dealing with a throwing shoulder injury. So the reason you'd go to the running backs, you know, I'd like Javonte, but Melvin Gordon, I guess, is fine as well, would be just in DFS that they won't be popular because they're coming off back-to-back slumps. You know, it's a game theory thing. It's not an I have confidence in this offense thing in any way.
Yeah, the only way I'd be going to one of these guys is if I was going to Melvin Gordon with the idea that why not shut the rookie down? He's dealing with this knee injury thing. What do you see? You already know that he's awesome. Just, you know, let him rest up. This game means nothing for the Broncos. Melvin Gordon's a free agent after the year. Just feed him, you know, try to get a spark and maybe we can get, you know, some Melvin Gordon DFS winnings, but that's obviously a Galbraith take that I probably won't be actually using.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually not a bad take. It's just so hard to keep NFL players off the field. And, you know, their view on it, yeah, sure, he's hurt, but he's young, so he'll be fine. Yeah, even if he tears his patellar tendon, he'll be fine,
yeah,
probably.
No,
so
he won't.
Care. By the way,
Pat's like the overprotective father coming in to protect Javonte.
Well, I'm combining it. It's 38 carries for 81 combined yards for these Broncos running backs over the past 2 weeks.
This God.
Unbelievable. Any final notes on this game, you guys? Anything you had to say on Chiefs Broncos?
Nah.
Well, I'm sure you're going to have a lot to say on our next game. Chiefs Broncos will be followed up by a Saturday evening contest between a Cowboys Eagles tilt, where the theme will be staying healthy for January. The Eagles have already telegraphed that they plan to rest their starters. But Kyle, are we unsure if the Cowboys will do the same? What's the motivation tracker saying on the Cowboys? Is there anyone we can truly trust in DFS? Is it Tony Pollard season as they maybe rest Ezekiel Elliott headed in the postseason? What is the state of the Dallas Cowboys heading into this Saturday evening game?
Yeah, Eagles, as you said, have already said, like, we're not sure if we're going to play our guys,
they're
dealing with the COVID crisis, too. So yeah, it's going to be a ton of backups. And they can't move their seed beyond six, which still has them facing the Bucs most of the time, just the way it works out. So there's, like, no reason for them to play. I'm not sure any one of their starters really goes, even if they come off the COVID list. Dallas is actually a bit of a different scenario in which they can actually get to the number two seed. They need some, like, tiebreaker stuff to kind of work out in their fashion, but it's very realistic. They get to the number two seed, which gives them not a first round bye anymore, but home field advantage going all the way to the NFC Championship. So at least the NFC Championship would be, and Mike McCarthy has said that he's like, we play to win this game. He didn't quite say that they're playing their starters, but asked if they're playing their starters. He said, we're playing to win. Take that as everyone is going in this game. Or at least the rumors were that they were thinking about giving Zeke a few weeks off, like a month ago or more. If it didn't happen,
yeah, why didn't they do
that?
I
don't know. They should have given him 18 weeks off starting at the beginning of the season.
Well, hang on.
Come on.
Obviously, you know, you got to be thinking about the playoffs in mind here. And if the goal is to have your best back healthy in the playoffs, you should play Zeke as much as possible in the regular season and then unleash Tony Pollard.
That is absolutely correct. And I don't even like, why are they still giving Zeke run? This is ugly. And it totally just, if you want to just say that you love Zeke and it's the injury, that's fine. Still don't play him. But I expect they will play him if they were playing, like, why were they playing him last week if he was banged up by the week before that, et cetera, et cetera. I still think we see the normal, quite disappointing split this week. Potentially all of the starters, and I think they probably view Tony Pollard, given how much run he's seen throughout the year, essentially as a starter. He's not the backup.
When he has a torn plantar fascia, yeah, by
like,
the way.
He is not the backup to Ezekiel Elliott. He is their second running back, which they've used a pretty decent amount, and he's been more productive when used. So I think they wouldn't rest Zeke to give Pollard run. They'd rest both of them and give like Corey Clement run. So I think the starters get probably three quarters. They probably blow out the Eagles, who won't be playing their starters, who might not even be off the COVID list. So I think it's probably three quarters of what amounts to a blowout.
Yeah, probably Ito Smith, Corey Clement season for the Cowboys.
Is Ito Smith
is on the Cowboys, and I confirmed that he – oh, no, never mind. I pulled up his game log, and I said he played last weekend, but it was the last weekend of the 2020 season.
Well,
he is on the Cowboys. I have no idea. He must not be active or something. So never mind. I was trying to find the funniest possible name I could say.
I think it was funnier that you found the funniest possible name who wasn't on the roster.
No, he's on the ESPN roster list. So at some point this year, he was on the Dallas Football Cowboys. But yeah, it's going to be – so that's the thing. So like the two-game slate on Saturday, are we just like basically flying blind, say, beyond maybe the Cowboys receivers when it comes to this game? Like, is there any way we can like truly prognosticate who's going to be getting touches in this game on Saturday night?
I mean, I think it's fair to say three quarters. Like, I mean, McCarthy has said he wants to win this game. Even after that, he actually said that the two seed is huge to this team. And obviously, like, home field advantage, important. So, I mean, sure, maybe you get burned on having, you know, three quarters of Dak and he goes out pretty early, earlier than a normal quarterback would go in a blowout. But, like, your alternative, if you had already decided, like, oh, Mahomes is too popular, I'm going to play the contrarian play. The next contrarian play is either like a weaponless Jalen Hurts, more likely a weaponless Gardner Minshew, or Drew Lock. So I like
you, Minshew. Minshew is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's going to be Minshew, but can't say that officially yet because they haven't announced their starters aren't going to play. But assuming it's a weaponless Gardner Minshew or a Drew Lock, so like three quarters of Dak is still better than those guys.
All I can say is the guaranteed prize pool Pat, aka me, is going to be having Gardner Minshew in some lineups on Saturday and winning $0. Winning $0.
Oh boy. Yeah, you're going to win exactly $0 if you do that. Because he's going against this Dallas defense that is quite good.
Yeah, he's going to get Lawrence Taylored by Micah Parsons. It's fine.
Sorry,
it's fine.
I have bad news. I think Parsons put on a COVID list earlier today.
Oh, my gosh.
Parsons is on COVID list, yeah.
Kyle, that's another thing about these Eagles backs, where even if they came off the COVID list, even if the Eagles decided they're going to play their starters for a little bit, I mean, Jordan Howard, you know, was banged up for a while. I think Boston Scott was even banged up a little bit. Like, they're going to want to rest these guys. And the Eagles, just everyone, such a physical run-first team. I just can't see them not taking advantage this week as full rest. And do we have any Eagles sicko DFS plays, or is it just too volatile of a situation to even mess with?
Hey, if they're resting everybody, then we're going to see Kenneth Gainwell.
You better believe we will.
That's right. That's right. That is true. It is Gainwell. This feels like a preseason slate.
Oh, yeah, it definitely has that vibe.
The Saturday slate.
And Gainwell's running back 14 in yards per route run, which was his whole deal, you know, that he's supposed to be this receiving back. That's translated pretty well. They hate everything about him, but that means they're going to play him a lot. So I kind of like him this week.
Interestingly,
you like him because his team hates him. That's DFS.
That's how we play week 18 DFS.
Interestingly, both Dallas Goedert and their backup Jack Stoll got added to the COVID list on their active roster. I'm sure they have a practice squad guy they can call up. That would only leave Tyree Jackson, former the Washington DC Defenders XFL quarterback, and has never, as far as I could tell, caught a pass in a live game, even dating back to high school, I don't think, is usually what you want your starting tight end to be. I think he has two.
Well,
go ahead.
You want to talk about a guy they don't hate. Tyree Jackson broke his back in training camp, and they didn't put him on season-ending injured reserve. They made sure that he made the final 53, then they put him on injured reserve following that so that they could bring him back. Guy's like a former quarterback, athlete type, kind of a Logan Thomas-y type of story.
He's big and fast.
I'm in on him too. Let's go.
He's like 6'7", 250, I believe, and runs a 4.59. Like, those are really good tight end numbers. Again, has never caught a pass in a live game, as far as I could tell. Not in college, not in the XFL, not in the NFL. And
not in grade school, not in the
program. I found one season of his high school stats, and they didn't list any receptions for him. So as far as I know,
I think he was a quarterback, though.
Well, yeah, he was. Of course. I'm just saying, like, the guy has no experience really playing. He has, like, less than 50 snaps at tight end this year, I think. So a tight end who's never really played tight end, to be fair, but he's big, relatively fast for his size, and could see literally every snap because they'll have to call up someone from the practice squad, right? I assume.
Quickly, we're talking about players the Eagles hate. Maybe JJ Arcega-Whiteside this weekend in DFS.
He does fit that bill of they don't like him, he'll get a lot of run, but we believe Kenneth Gainwell to be good, and that's why he would play well, despite the team not thinking he's good. I don't believe that JJ Arcega-Whiteside, no matter how many targets you give him, will really amount to much, if anything.
Well, he doesn't get targets. He gets like a target every 200 routes.
He'll probably be blocking a lot for Kenneth Gainwell. I think he's pretty good at blocking, actually. So maybe that's why he's still on the roster. So I don't know.
He and N'Keal Harry need to convert.
I guess you're kind of on your own if you're DFSing this game, or we're going to have content on it. And are we getting a show with Daigle this week, Kyle, by the way, or are we not?
Yeah, we're getting a show with Daigle this week.
Yeah, so there'll be some DFS action on the game because there's DFS action on every game because we are all maladjusted people and we can't help ourselves. But we head next to Los Angeles where points bet is the Rams getting 4.5 points at home against the 49ers. The Rams are trying to nail down the number two seed while the 49ers need to win to wrap up their postseason spot. The Niners can get in even if they lose, but it's a whole heck of a lot easier if they win. So, Kyle, both these teams should be trying, correct? And is it safe to say it's Elijah Mitchell DFS season after he out-touched Jeff Wilson 23-0 last Sunday?
Well, that's a good number. It was 21 carries, 2 catches, I believe. And yes, as you pointed out, both of these teams motivated. Rams can get, I believe, the number two seed. And they still haven't locked up their division yet. Cardinals could catch them. So home field advantage in play for the Rams and 49ers, obviously. They play at the same window as the Saints. So maybe they're scoreboard watching, right? Because if the Saints lose, they're in regardless. But for their purposes, they will be playing, you know, most of the game, if not all of it, as if they need to win. And as you said, like Elijah Mitchell, I don't care if the Rams are a difficult run defense. Elijah Mitchell has looked supremely talented in the role this year, and they are totally comfortable. Like, first game back, immediately, give them the full backfield. It seems like at that point, we want to buy talent. We want to buy opportunity. They're motivated to play, and it's an ugly slate where not a lot of teams are motivated to play, and not a lot of teams are that good. So I will totally be buying Elijah Mitchell.
Kyle, while you're blurbing Wednesday afternoon, see, we're taping on Wednesday afternoon. So there'll probably be more information on this by the time you're listening to the show. Any insight into the 49ers quarterback this week? It seems like they're going to push hard for it to be Jimmy Garoppolo. Have you come across anything shedding any more light on that yet or not?
Yeah, Jimmy was supposed to be a limited practice day. They didn't release the official report yet, but there's not really a way that he gets scaled back from the limited. So if he's limited Wednesday, that's a pretty typical sign that a player will play. Players coming off of injuries sometimes get limited throughout the week and don't play. But if there were ever a time where that rule doesn't hold, it would be a must-win game for the 49ers, in which Kyle Shanahan already said that if he's healthy, Jimmy Garoppolo is the starter. So I bet pretty confidently he plays this week.
And Kyle Shanahan has threatened to never talk about injuries again because he keeps getting asked about a starting quarterback's thumb. So I don't think we're going to be getting too much more other than his practice reports this week.
And by the way, I mean, I kind of made like truthing Kyle Shanahan one of my pet causes this year. He's had a better second half of the season than first half of the season. I have to say that I don't fault him for wanting to start Jimmy Garoppolo. As bad as Jimmy Garoppolo was in week 16 against the Titans, and we were talking real, real bad. Trey Lance was better in week 17 than he was in week 5, but it's just kind of as advertised, still just a very raw rookie. The ball placement was not great. He was actually running less than he did in week 5, too. Maybe he didn't really need to. It's a game they actually took control of in the second half. But Trey Lance did look like it looked like the 49ers weren't blowing smoke, that he had made progress in practice. But he definitely didn't look like the guy they'd want out there as they're trying to nail down a playoff spot. So I don't think we can fault the 49ers for starting Jimmy.
He looked pretty good in the advanced metrics. He was 6th on the week in EPA per play, 5th in completion percentage over expected. And I was seeing Chris Sims had a thread where he was talking about how like some of his throws are actually kind of lower risk throws than Jimmy Garoppolo's because he's not throwing into traffic. So they might be like lower completion throws potentially, but like, you know, there's more margin for error in terms of the ball placement stuff, which to the eye, I mean, it still seems like his motion looks kind of weird. Like he's not really hitting guys like in stride. Like it all seems a little off.
No,
but it was kind of
weird. Well, yeah, to talk about the your margin for error point, his 45-yard touchdown to Deebo Samuel was literally a designed cross field pass. They rolled him out to the right, had him stop and pivot and throw to left. Clearly like design. It wasn't ad-libbing. And so Deebo Samuel, no one was within like 50 feet of Deebo Samuel. And the ball was still not particularly close to him.
Whoever was supposed to guard him is like, they're not going to try and throw this, are they? I'm going to go cover anyone.
Not a great, and they did not a great throw from Trey Lance, but the margin for error was quite high. And Deebo Samuel reeled it in. And he scored.
Also, I think Chris Sims released his quarterback list today. And I believe Kellen Mond was ranked ahead of Trey Lance. So, you know, he's also not that high.
Well, hey, look, you can't get all of them, right?
Hey, he's higher on Kellen Mond than our colleague Chris Sims is higher on Kellen Mond than his coach, Mike Zimmer, is.
That's true.
That was one of the quotes of the year. I love this, the not particularly. That was so, that is just like twisting the knife, man, Mike. Come on, man. You got to be a little, you have to say something, anything other than not particularly.
Well, no, I mean, that was
getting big.
Yeah, he says, do you want to see Kellen Mond this week? Not particularly. And then the guy goes, why? And he goes, I see him every day.
I know.
That was the best.
big absentee parent vibes from Mike Zimmer there.
He did kick it up a notch with that one. What is the state of this Rams team heading into the postseason? Sonny Michel still eating. Odell Beckham has touchdowns in 5 of his past 6 games after scoring 0 in Cleveland. So it looks like maybe Baker Mayfield had something to do with his struggles after all in Cleveland.
Couldn't be.
We have any Rams thoughts quickly on this game or no? Are we out of things to say on the Rams?
I feel like it's business as usual. They've been they've been significantly worse down the stretch. Basically, in the first 9 games of the year, they were 2nd in EPA per dropback, and there was a pretty big gulf between them and 3rd. They were an elite passing team since then. So weeks 10 through 17, they are, I believe, 12th or 13th in EPA per dropback. Still good numbers, but we know that they obviously lost Robert Woods. Also, it came out that Matt Stafford dealing with the chronic back issues plus the elbow thing. I don't think there are huge limitations. I think they were probably running hot to get to 2nd in EPA per dropback through that first window. But I do think they've kind of come back to earth as a good but not hyper elite passing a team.
Yeah, it's interesting because Stafford last week was 7th in EPA on the week. And, you know, that's pretty good. But he was in this smash spot against the Ravens. So it felt like just a total disaster. Throws pick 6.
Yeah.
And he started off with the pick 6.
Yeah.
As he likes to do.
Yeah. And his completion percentage over expected has been below where you would think it was, especially given how efficient their play has been. He's been kind of running hot in efficiency all season based on his accuracy. So I don't know. The Rams, in terms of their playoff setup, it feels like they're just a really volatile team because you could see them washing out in the first round pretty easily, but you could also see them with Cam Akers coming back, you know, kind of like reestablishing that identity from like the 2017-2018 run a little bit with a better quarterback than Goff. I still think, you know, as much as Stafford's let us down, they obviously got Cooper Kupp playing, but an MVP.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Level, so they just feel like one of the most volatile teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think Stafford's just been looking like what he is. He's really, really good when he's at full health, but he's 33, 34. He hasn't really been at full health much the past few years. He's really tough, so he's not missing games, but he's had a lot of chronic injuries that seem to maybe be affecting his play a little bit. And because he was really cooking with gas the first half of the season. Yeah, then the elbow happened, then the back flared up, and just hasn't been quite the same since then. And again, he's a guy who's played through like a ton of injuries the past 4 or 5 years, doesn't really miss time. But he hasn't looked 100% healthy to me, and definitely something to keep an eye on heading into the playoffs.
Doers, mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
We are entering the final week of the NFL regular season, and the NBC Sports Predictor app powered by PointsBet has you covered with Sunday Night 7. We're giving you a shot to win $1 million this Sunday night. It is free and easy to play, so predict what will happen between the Chargers and Raiders for a chance to win. Download today from your app store or visit NBCSports.com/predictor. PointsBet has the downtrodden Cleveland Browns ready to host the Bengals as 5.5-point home favorites as Vegas readies for the Bengals to rest their starters. Joe Burrow with his knee tweak has already been declared out. Sounds like Ja'Marr Chase might not play. So, Crane, we're not going to see the real Bengals this weekend, but I'm going to ask you the ultimate cliche question. Have the Bengals become the team that nobody wants to play in the postseason after Joe Burrow stacked up 971 yards over the past 2 weeks?
I think that's up to the Bengals, really, because we just saw them, you know, in week – credit to them in week 16, because they just attacked a matchup in a really intelligent way after – you know, I was giving them all this crap in the walkthrough. Hayden Winks was talking about, you know, their pass rate were expected.
Never heard of Hayden Winks. Don't know who that is.
Yeah, you should check him out.
No, yeah, but really, yeah, Hayden's a really, really great follower, yes. Former colleague.
And so he had some good information about their pass rate were expected, and, you know, just they weren't playing to the strengths of the team in a way that was very frustrating to see. From week 9 through 15, they had pass rate over expected of minus 2, minus 3, minus 5, minus 6, minus 3, and minus 1%. They're 3-3 over that stretch. They're just like, they're playing mediocre style of football and they're getting mediocre results. Then they attack the Ravens the way you beat the Ravens through the air. Pass rate over expected of 15%. They just went full throttle. And, you know, that's a higher rate than we've seen on average from the Chiefs and the Bucs by a wide margin. And then last week, they had a pass rate of expected of 14%. And I feel like just having, you know, watched some of that game, they had to be pushed by the Chiefs. They didn't necessarily, like, come out the same way as aggressively as they did against the Ravens. But in the playoffs, they should be getting pushed a lot. So I think that's the hope here, is that, you know, they kind of embrace. Also, like, they also saw what happens, right? Like, they also saw the results of Joe Burrow when you go pass heavy. So, you know, it's stand to reason they build their playoff game plans around him and the receiver. So, yeah, I think they probably are. They're kind of peaking right now. Burrow's up to second in EPA per play behind Rodgers. You know, he's looking like he could be, you know, I mean, to be honest, Burrow probably should be like the MVP front runner based on what we saw over the last 2 weeks. Like,
he should be in the top five for absolute sure. Like, you could argue he's the front runner. Even there is a viable argument.
I don't think he is, but like the Bengals should have made him. Like, the Bengals are a reason he's not winning the MVP, not his own skill.
That's a really good point. I would say maybe like the only red flag now with the Bengals heading in the postseason is this: will Joe Burrow be healthy? There's no way he's going to miss the game. But maybe now, because, you know, it took him a little while, kind of by his own admission, to regain trust in his knee. And now he's got another knee tweak. And just maybe wondering where
he's at. And the name on his jersey was literally ripped off last week. Like, he does have a pretty bad offensive line. And in defense of the Bengals of what they were trying to do, I think part of it was like they were just trying to get this guy healthy to the playoffs. So I don't mean to rip him too much. But you know, they at the same time, they were still kind of like – putting a restrictor plate on their own offense.
Yeah, it didn't work out a lot of times. It worked out some weeks, but they could be sitting better than 9 or whatever. What are they? Are they 10-6? What are they? I think they're 10-6. They could have had another dub or two if they had played a little more aggressive.
Yeah, they are 10-6. I think they actually have like a non-zero chance of getting the one seed as well, but like they have like a 9-way parlay that has to hit for them. So as you pointed out, they don't have a chance at really a realistic chance of doing it. I don't think we see any of their starters. As Crane said, like, they're definitely the team we saw in week 16 and 17 is a terrifying team to play in the playoffs. The team we saw in the previous 6 weeks is not, I think most times the team they play in the playoffs is going to push them because good teams generally make the playoffs. But like, if they play the Colts and the Colts want to run with like Jonathan Taylor 30 times, that game could be quite boring. Or like the Pats, they could play a pretty meh game versus the Pats. But if they make it, say, face the Chiefs again, or, you know, even the Chargers, those games should be quite fun.
Even the run game experience and reps this year could come back to work out for them in the postseason. It's a bad weather day or something like that. I mean, I think something we're seeing over and over again this year is like the defenses are finally fully optimized to stop the pass. When the pass has been stopped for a lot of teams, they have no backup plan. And I've just become unwatchable. So I guess at least to the Bengals' credit, they at least have a backup plan. Like, to Crane's point, with these passing game weapons, Joe Burrow, they should be passing over expected. Like, they should be a pass-first offense. But they at least have proven they are capable of running the ball if that does come up in January for them. And the Toronto won a playoff game, their best odds are to go pass-heavy. But they at least have the ability.
And last week, right, 14% pass rate over expected, as I mentioned – but then they grind away the last 6 minutes of that game. They get the win. Exactly. The Chiefs never touched the ball again. You know, that's like the way to be run heavy and sort of in a tactical way. That's great. you know, to have that as a tool, that's definitely increases their odds of winning. We should note, by the way, that Joe Mixon's on the COVID list, so he'll definitely be out for the entirety of this game.
And yeah, but that's, I think that's the message the Bills got, by the way, Crane, after their Patriots, after they got spooked against the Pats, the Bills realized that they're not going to become like a run first team, but they're like, yeah, maybe we should work on this run game a little bit. And like actually have a running back who can take carries every once in a while. And it's worked out for the Bills. So what I'm saying is, yeah, the pass is dead. Long live the run.
That's the other not side, the takeaway.
No, not even.
Pass close. Deep. Pass not deep, baby. Yeah. That's the takeaway.
Pat, have you been paying attention at all? I know you're a host of the show, but I feel like you missed. Like,
what's another thing, man? Yeah, back to non-sarcasm mode. Like, teams, not only had teams gotten so pass-heavy, they'd gotten so pass-conservative. Like, for a while, like, the only one taking any deep shots in the entire NFL was Pat Mahomes to Tyreek Hill. We're seeing again this year, like, oh, you know, maybe if you have someone like Jamar Chase, you should throw down the field a lot.
Yeah.
Because they happen to score 70-yard touchdowns all the time.
Yeah, but if you've got Penny Sewell, you could run DeAndre Swift and Jamal Williams 35 times.
Yeah, I think that debate's been settled.
It's kind of like the Al Davis philosophy of, you know, like, you know, you're going deep. Totally. But at the same time, these guys aren't speed guys. T. Higgins, I forget, ran like a 4.5 for 4.6. Jamar Chase isn't like all that fast. They're just both, but they're both awesome downfield weapons. And like, how do you stop the, you know, they're so much more difficult to stop right now than basically any other passing game because you have two legitimate, like high-end downfield weapon, like 30, 40-yard downfield weapons. Very few teams. I mean, like even the Chiefs, they've got Tyreek. That's it. They're not using Kelce that far downfield typically.
And it's funny. That's how like a lot of pass offenses used to be designed, where like they didn't bother with like the short game at all, which is why you get stuff like John Elway having like a 51% completion percentage. Like you go to like their Pro Football Reference, like this guy was terrible. John Elway won an MVP the year he converted 32% of his passes. That seems bad. And it's because they actually threw downfield like all the time. And they had a lot of tweaking to do to the system. It's not even close to perfected. You need short passing. But yeah, just I really have been wanting the return of the deep ball. And the Bengals are giving us hope. On the other side of this ball, I don't even know what to say about the Browns. We don't know if Baker Mayfield's going to play this week. He was consulting his agent. Okay, yeah.
He's not.
Yeah, his agent told him not to play. It was trending that way to begin with. Instead of just talking about the Browns this game, can the Browns really move on from Baker Mayfield? Like, I know why they would want to, but everyone's just saying what an awful quarterback draft class this is. The free agent class is Jameis Winston, Teddy, Trubisky, Andy Dalton, Foles, Fitzpatrick. They could make a trade. That would probably be their best bet is the quarterback trade market. But do you guys actually think the Browns will move on for Baker Mayfield, or will they cling to like, this was because of injury? Baker was bad because he had three injuries all year. What do you think is going to happen with the Browns and Baker Mayfield?
Yeah, because the class is quite poor, and they're not, even if it wasn't poor, they're not going to be picking like top five or anything. And as you noted, the free agency class isn't like, Baker played poorly this year, but you're not getting any massive upgrades. I think even the remote chance that Jimmy Garoppolo comes really isn't that possible. So like something like that could be argued, but is it, I think he's an upgrade, but like, I don't see the team thinking that much given that he did play through just a ton of injuries, not just the shoulder injury, but like knee, ankle, I'm sure other things, and his weapons, although they traded one of them away, were pretty poor. I think Jarvis Landry is your top option is pretty weak. And then the Austin Hooper is your top tight end is not great, but they have good backup tight ends. You can actually make plays. I just think that was on Stefanski, kind of poor usage of the tight end room. Things were stacked against him, but he did himself no favors. Some truly egregious decision-making and some truly egregious throws. I'd love to see them pick up like whatever, you know, Western Kentucky, Washington State quarterback. I actually think it is Western Kentucky has a good, like super high counting stats, although it's Western Kentucky quarterback, or the athletic Jalen Hurts type in the second round. If Baker flops, which that's what happened with Carson Wentz and Jalen Hurts. Carson Wentz got his shot. He flopped. And then they went to Jalen Hurts at the end. He showed enough to say, let's give him a shot. And the shot turned out to be a good shot worth giving now that they're in the playoffs. So I'd love to see them do something like that, where they take either the like small school, like Gardner Minshew type, almost where his counting stats are good. The efficiency is good, but was his competition really worthwhile? Or the super athletic guy, give Baker another shot. Hopefully draft a first or second round wide receiver, give him some help, maybe in free agency, give him a shot. But then if he continues to look like Baker Mayfield, throw in that low cost, high upside second or third round pick and see if that guy can make something of himself.
I agree with most of that. I would say don't take a wide receiver in the first round. This is a pretty thin wide receiver class for Dynasty, and we can't have that landing spot. I would say I really like the idea of kind of getting like a highly athletic guy or a small school guy with some red flags, but some upside. This year should like reinforce the fact, especially, you know, a couple years removed from Josh Allen surprising quarterback evaluators, Justin Herbert surprising quarterback evaluators. Now this class comes in and Mac Jones, the only guy who's like posting anything close to impressive efficiency. The quarterbacks are very difficult to evaluate. So I think, you know, that goes both ways. You can miss big and you can hit big. I would say take a shot if you can keep the draft capital pretty low. But you should also be exploring a trade too, because like he's been, I know the injury, and I think the injury is like a legitimate excuse, but he's also been.
It is. I mean, he's not great, but he's not this
bad. He's not this bad.
Because he was this.
But if he plays this bad again, everyone's getting fired. And he was behind Andy Dalton and Daniel Jones in EPA per play this year, 26th in EPA per play.
This is a family show. We don't need to hear
he's
that.
He's behind in completion percentage over expected behind Jacoby Brissett, Justin Fields, Carson Wentz. Like, it's just not good. So
yeah, can one of the editors tag this as explicit content? Yeah, now that, this is heinous.
This is ridiculous.
This isn't the stat of the week, but I should have made it the stat of the week. But it's like, if you're going to go back to the, you better be sure from a coaching perspective that, you know, it really was the injury, because Stefanski's getting fired if he plays like this again. And there's some quarterbacks who might be available. I mean, you can check out Watson, like send him to the Texans, right? Like that gives them two outs to maybe getting a decent quarterback. You know, maybe Pete Carroll would really like to run the ball with Baker Mayfield at quarterback. You know, get Russell Wilson.
I was going to say, you know what definitely not make Russell Wilson the Joker is getting traded to another run-first balanced offense.
Yeah. We're not rooting for that because, yeah, we don't want Russ in Cleveland, but, you know, there's some more fun locations. Oh, I'd take Cleveland over Seattle in a heartbeat. But
yeah, I think at this point you take Stefanski over Mr. For sure. Peter Sherrill.
But yeah, I think definitely explore the trade as well.
I think that would be their best avenue. If they wanted to make a true upgrade, I think it's going to have to be via the trade. A true upgrade is
pretty good roster. Like, I think it would make sense to go like pretty all in on, you know, one of those two guys.
Yeah, absolutely would. In Miami, the road tripping Patriots are 6.5-point favorites as they play for an AFC East title and potentially the number one seed in the AFC. As Kyle said, it'd have to be like a 9 play parlay, but it's a possibility. So we know the Pats are going to try, Kyle, but who are we liking in DFS after the Dolphins suffered the exposure of a lifetime at the hands of the Titans last weekend? Are there any Patriots we're excited about this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, we're always, I don't want to say excited because we kind of know what he is, but Jacoby Myers, always a good target vacuum, and it scored last week. I believe the second time of the year was nice. They put up 50, so of course he finally got in the end zone when they did that, and they're relatively motivated. They still have actually the AFC East title to play for, where them and the Bills are both in contention, obviously, and they could get the number one seed. They might know if they can or not, because they need the Chiefs to lose. That's one of the things that needs to happen, is they need the Chiefs to lose. That could be over, probably should be over by Saturday, but they will still be playing for serious home field advantage because of the AFC East title. To me, it's mostly the running backs, though. I know, you know, Jacoby Myers, lots of targets, but if they're not going to put up 50, which you can't always expect even against Miami, if they're not putting up 50, he's not that likely to get in the end zone. Both the running backs just look like elite options. The Miami run defense has not been particularly good this year. I believe they're outside of the top 20 in EPA per play allowed to opposing running games. And they've looked even worse over the past few weeks, which is shocking because they've been really good. I don't want to say really good. They have been good against the pass in the sense they've played a ton of bad quarterbacks, but you would think that would also funnel to the run. When you're playing, you know, Mike Glennon or Zach Wilson, you can defend the run more easily. And I believe they're bottom six in EPA against the run over their past 5 weeks. It's a small sample, but you'd think against those terrible offenses, if you can shut down the pass, like, it's quite easy. Dedicate a little more to the run, and they haven't been able to do that. They've looked very poor. So I expect, as massive favorites, looking to secure a playoff, not a playoff spot, looking to secure that potentially number two seed, if not just the AFC's title. Lots of Ramondre, lots of Damian, both very much in play, even if in committee.
Yeah, the Patriots, by the way, I mean, even when they have had like the number one seed locked up in years past, they've like still tried to humiliate their week 17, week 18 opponents. So pretty confident that they will go full bore in this game.
Yeah, and this is a stat of the week here, is that
lay it on us.
Only Josh Allen has seen more dropbacks against the blitz this season than Mac Jones. Miami leads the league in blitz rate. And this makes me kind of get into Bill Belichick's head a little bit here, which is a very dangerous thing to try to do, but I'm going to do it.
You're as good of a football mind as Bill Belichick.
I'm definitely not, but I'm just trying to think about how he might be approaching this. They played Miami in week one. So Mac Jones hasn't seen these guys since the very first week of the season. He gets blitzed all the time. You're entering the playoffs. You know teams are going to be blitzing in the playoffs. You get a chance to have him go against the blitzing team. I mean, why not have him back there for every snap and basically just like, this is like a perfect practice for the playoffs, right? Like that's what other defenses all year have basically said, we're going to attack the rookie by blitzing him. Let him prep.
By the way, he hasn't done that great. I don't know what the stats are against the blitz. I mean, he clearly hasn't been bad against the blitz, but
he's been, his yards per attempt has dropped from 7.5 to 6.7, passer rating down from 95.6 to 87.9. So like he's not as good against the blitz as when he's not blitz, but he's not a disaster.
But I will say, just to the OI test, he doesn't always feel pressure that well. Like he takes a lot of like unblocked sacks, like where he just like won't be aware there's like a free rusher, and he's kind of got like a little Tannehill in him in that regard, where I've seen him take like a lot of like thundering sacks, or like basically like the defensive end gets to like lay him out. And so hopefully he's worked on that in the second half of the season, Mr. Mac Jones. On the other side of the ball, I mean, it's kind of like another Baker Mayfield discussion. Have we learned anything with Tua Tagovailoa this year? Only a 15-10 touchdown to interception total. He hasn't exceeded 250 yards in five straight games, even though a lot of those were really soft opponents. You know, he's Mr. RPO. He's Mr. like throwing to the flat. Did we learn anything positive about Tua? I mean, we learned that he's not a bad quarterback, because a bad quarterback would already be like have gotten benched, or, you know, just like be truly terrible. He's not truly terrible, but does it look like there's like a next step for Tua, or is he already kind of at his ceiling?
Yeah, it's been fine. As you said, he's not bad. I wasn't like awfully impressed by him this year, but he got better. And I think as long as a quarterback continues getting better, especially when you believe them to have some sort of ceiling, obviously when you take a guy top 10, you believe them to have a real like Super Bowl caliber ceiling. Even if he's not Patrick Mahomes, he could get you there. If you believe that and he got better this year, I definitely think you're optimistic about next year, right? His completion percentage, his touchdown rate, his yards per attempt all went up. Sack rate went down. He did make a few more interceptions, higher interception rate. But if he improves this year, you think there's a decent chance he improves next year as well. He was also dealing with a handful of injuries. His wide receiver room was changing every single week. So I don't know. I think there is room to be optimistic.
It's actually really
there's room
point.
To be optimistic, yeah. That he can be well above average. Now, watching him, do I think he has a Mahomesian ceiling? No, obviously, I don't believe that. But could he be like the peak of Kirk Cousins or Jimmy Garoppolo's powers? Yeah, I think he could achieve that. And those players in the right circumstances. I mean, we saw Jimmy G make the Super Bowl. So I think he's still got more room to grow, and that he's shown growth means he can grow there. But, you know, I don't think this will ever be a super elite offense.
Yeah, I think that should actually be the takeaway from Tua. I genuinely didn't know what to think when you were talking. So, like, he didn't take like a next step this year, but the fact that the bottom didn't fall out with, like you said, his receivers in and out of the lineup. I don't know how many gifs I've seen of the left side of the Dolphins line just letting like unblocked dudes
not a good
run
line.
Right into Tua's grill. So maybe the fact that the bottom didn't fall out should be the takeaway for Tua this year.
Yeah. And I think the line is a big takeaway. I mean, they rank 32nd in pass blocking grade by PFF.
Well, how many teams are there ranked?
I do enjoy in the walkthrough when I write 32nd, I'll often write dead last.
Just for emphasis. That's because it's fun. That's something that Evan Silva would do. That's a good thing to do.
Yeah. And then 29th in run blocking grade. And that we know their run game stunk all year. So it's like when you have a bad pass blocking offensive line, the worst, and then you don't have a run game. I mean, we know that sets up the quarterback, you know, puts a lot on their shoulders. And the biggest criticism that we have for him is that he throws short too much and he doesn't take enough deep shots. And he's actually been pretty accurate this year. So, you know, you can't really fault him too much for that. And it's like, yeah, how many deep shots is he really supposed to take if the line's terrible? I think, you know, to me, he feels like a little Teddy Bridgewater-esque right now. Like, obviously, Teddy Bridgewater had a devastating knee injury, which I think affected his play. We talked about this a few weeks ago. But I think his ceiling is beyond even what Teddy Bridgewater would have been without that knee injury. I think that Kirk Cousins comparison is a pretty good one. But, you know, Cousins, like, has also been kind of in this ceiling-capped situation where, you know, they're so run-heavy. Derek Carr was another guy who came to mind of like, you know, Matt Ryan probably not ever going to win the MVP the way Matt Ryan did, but you know, some of the better Matt Ryan seasons, I think we could get there with Tua. So you've got accuracy. You've got a guy who's going to throw short if he feels like that's the best option, like a lot more often than maybe some other quarterbacks, but give him an offensive line and then see if that corrects a little bit.
Subscribe to NBC Sports Edge Plus and get every tool for every game. Fantasy, DFS, and betting premium tools are all included in one subscription at one low price. You can subscribe monthly or save 20% on an annual subscription. We've made it easier than ever with more tools than ever to play and wager with confidence with NBC Sports Edge Plus. We got two real great games left, folks. Actually, this game is bad, but it's like amazing compared to the final game. We have the Titans at the Texans. Points bet as the Titans catching 10.5 points on the road as they look to put the finishing touches on the number one seed. Crane, Derrick Henry has resumed practicing. Kyle's also like, you guys are both blurbing on Wednesdays. Have we seen anything today suggest you might actually play this week? Maybe get just thrown in there to get warmed up for the playoffs or anything as a Derrick Henry season in week 18. And if you don't know, that's totally fine.
I think it's definitely not, was my read on it. And in fact, one of the reasons for them to play and play to win this week, I mean, is that they can get an extra week. If they win, they get the bye week, and then Derrick Henry doesn't have to play for two more weeks, and then it's Derrick Henry season. So I think it's Deontay Foreman season right now. He's played pretty well. Yeah. You know, he's running back 8 in success per attempt this year, running back 3 in yards per out run. Pretty small sample. He's not a receiving back, but the fact that he can do anything there at all gives a little more versatility. So I think they're going to be riding Foreman, trying to get the win here, and then two more weeks of rest for Henry, and then it really could be
the big dog Derrick is Henry back. Woof, woof. I don't know. I wish I hadn't said that on a podcast. Yikes. Maybe the dumbest thing I've said all year.
at least you brought the energy.
Yeah, I know. I can actually do a pretty good dog bark, by the way, but yeah, not going to be breaking that one out on the podcast.
Humble brag.
You seem to be sort of a Shakespearean in your talking about yourself, the fake cries and the incredible dog barking, but we haven't seen very much of it.
Yeah, you're not going to get the DMX bark from me on the podcast, even though I can do it.
Try and play the cool guy that you are.
So, yeah, I don't know. Not a whole lot to say here. Davis Mills, 2022 ? Was the note I wrote for the Texans. Because like you guys said earlier in the pod, you know, other than Mac Jones, he's probably shown the most. Even though it wasn't a great, great start for Davis Mills last week, and something I noticed was he was actually like completing passes on the boundary, like that narrow space that exists between like the sideline and the cornerback, and where he's already making some fairly advanced level throws. You know, doing it without what's not an amazing supporting cast, he's turned kind of like deep threadish Brandon Cooks and like a guy that he can lock on to, and just lots of real positives from a guy who was a third round rookie. And we might have laughed in October if we had read a report that the Texans are going to give Davis Mills a chance to start in 2022, but we're all in agreement that that's probably actually like a good thing to do at this point, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they brought in a veteran to back him up, like the way the Browns have Case Keenum, someone that if the floor falls out, which it totally could on Davis Mills, that guy goes in and probably still loses a bunch of games. But yeah, I'd be fine with him getting another start. I know, you know, you guys talked about it. It's not a good looking quarterback class. I'd love to see them trade back because, you know, they have a lot of holes on this team. It's mostly just a circle that's empty in the middle of, you know, devoid of talent. So they could use all the draft picks they could get. I'm not sure if they would do that. Doesn't seem like a very Houston thing to do, but I'd be fine with them giving Davis Mills another shot. I don't think he's elite. He hasn't shown that he could be elite, but he showed that he could be competent.
Yeah, I'm kind of two minds because, you know, you could bring in a competent backup, you know, get like, you know, someone pretty decent like Case Keenum, as Kyle mentioned. Or you could just get the worst backup imaginable. And then if Davis Mills washes out, you get the number one pick. Mike, yeah, Glennon. Bring in Mike Glennon, you know, because I got to think.
Yeah. We got the man for the job.
There's a graph I'll have to walk through this week of the Giants offense. And it's
Mike Glennon just shows up in like a Blackhawk helicopter. He gets out, the propeller's still spinning. He reads the briefing. You hand him the briefing and he shoves it aside. He's like, I know what to do. Get out of my way.
Cut to a pick 6 in the first minute. But yeah, I mean, the guy that comes to mind a little bit as I was thinking through Davis Mills, maybe Andy Dalton, right? Second round pick, I believe.
Yeah.
And also just kind of locked into, you know, AJ Green at the time, you know, young AJ Green, not kind of the, but similar. It's like, hey, this guy's the only guy who's going to make plays for me. Brandon Cooks, AJ Green, you just lock in. If a team takes that away, you lose real bad. But when teams don't take that away, you look kind of decent. So, you know, I don't think that Davis Mills has all that high of a ceiling, but maybe they could be kind of a playoff bubble team like 3-4 years from now with him. I'd still probably be hoping he bombs so you can get another guy.
It's pretty insane that he's flashed at all. Yeah. It's insane that kind of he's flashed at all in this situation. But
I don't know if it's legal, but I'd give Esterby like $20 to trade for Tyler Huntley. I'd love to see 16 games of that guy starting. I know. He looks good.
17.
Yeah, they're resting him.
Sorry. Apology. Well, he gets the week 18 off because he earned them a first round bye. Yeah.
That's true. Good point. Tyler Huntley has looked like, how the heck, I've already said this podcast, how in the world did Tyler Huntley not get invited to the combine? He was the all Pac-12 selection over Justin Herbert. So it wasn't like he didn't do anything.
If you're the Raiders, you're holding on to Tyler Huntley, I assume. But what about Josh Johnson?
You'd have zero reason to
bring Josh Johnson in. This guy's looked awesome all year. Anytime he's gotten a chance.
Bring Mike White in.
No, don't bring Mike White in.
Exactly. Just bring in Flacco. Come on. Bring in any Jet who's not Zach Wilson. Come on. Even though Zach Wilson's finally starting to show a little completions.
A couple, two, three.
Any other thoughts in this game or no?
Well, I guess, were you guys reading this the same way with Henry, that he's not playing until the playoffs?
That was my general vibe.
That actually makes a ton of sense. I hadn't thought deeply about it yet. I was hoping my analysts had, and they had. It would make all the sense in the world for him not to play this week, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's too much. I think maybe if they're playing like Kansas City for the number one seed, like straight up, yeah, sure, they could get Henry in because every little bit helps. Maybe I'm thinking about this in a non-coaching way because I don't think coaches quite read into their opponents as much as I'd say, like, yeah, dude, you don't need Derrick Henry. You're, what, like, I don't know, 7-8 point favorites over Houston at least. You don't need him. I don't think coaches quite read into that type of stuff as much. But no, if you were to even consider it for a second, you would say, we can beat this team without Derrick Henry and then really compound the extra rest he'd get.
Mm-hmm. I think what's clear is that if they had to win this weekend, if it was win and in, maybe Derrick Henry would be playing. But I think that you're right. The coaches basically view every game as a must win and don't take anything for granted. But it makes too much sense to them to keep Derrick Henry under wraps for one more week, get those 2 weeks, and maybe get the real McCoy in the divisional round. And perhaps the most dismal matchup of the entire season, the Washington football team is rolling into East Rutherford, New Jersey, somehow as 7-point favorites against the laughingstock New York Giants. I mean, they should be 7-point favorites. I mean, like, how in the world is there a situation where Washington could be a touchdown favorite over your football team? And it's because you're starting Mike Glennon.
No, you're not.
And he's just looking as bad as every quarterback.
No. You wish you were starting Mike Glennon.
I'm saying
it's because you've been starting Mike Glennon, and things are getting worse. Like
that was the point. They've been starting Mike Glennon. And they announced Jake Fromm.
Mike Glennon injured his hand. He has to get surgery. He's done.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I mean, I've read the news.
Imagine up to date on Mike Glennon's health.
I read a lot. I read Giants news very closely. Week 18 Giants news. I mean, I've just been grinding that all week. So, yeah, anyways, Jake Fromm, who maybe the only quarterback in the NFL has looked worse than Mike Glennon this year. Is there anything at all to say about this game?
Well, Kellen Mond, maybe. We just not impressing in practice.
Ian Book looked pretty tough too, man. It's been a few bad quarterbacks. In fact, it's been a lot of bad quarterbacks this year. This isn't quite stat of the week, but I believe in his first start, Jake Fromm threw for 25 yards. He got pulled afterwards. And that was somehow more than Mike Glennon.
Mike Glennon
threw last
held
week,
his
fascinating
last week.
So I can't imagine why you'd play any of these guys. And then the Washington side, which would be the one you would actually be sort of like, oh, well, they have a solid implied team total because they play the Giants and the Giants are really bad at football or whatever. You might want to play them. Ron Rivera's talked about playing younger players, getting them reps in this game. So even if you assume like, oh, well, Gibson is the starter, I don't know if you play like Jared Patterson coming in the second half. And beyond that, like if you're not securing all of the opportunity you think you are with a Terry McLaurin, with an Antonio Gibson, what's the point? It's the Washington offense. It's not like you're trying to buy into three quarters of Mahomes versus four. It's a half, three quarters, most of a game of a Taylor Heinicke offense.
And Gibson's picked up injuries along the way. I would be.
He's limited today with a hip injury.
Yeah,
he is
I'd
off
be much
the COVID
more,
list. He is off the COVID list, though.
He is, but I think Patterson's way more interesting, you know, because you're basically the play is if you're playing anyone from this team, I think, or anyone from this entire game, I think Patterson is the only guy who holds any interest for me because
he really is.
You're just hoping that Washington blows them out and maybe, you know, gets ahead early, and, you know, they pull Gibson and you just have Patterson rolling for two touchdowns and, you know, you're good. I can't imagine playing Gibson because it's like you have to – it's such a thin bet where he has to score early because he's getting pulled. He's getting pulled.
I can't even imagine.
I feel like you're making the same bet with Patterson, though. You have to get him – like, it's just the other side of the coin, right? It's like, oh, well, you know, I'd love to get a half of a Washington back. I just
– You could see, like, I think three quarters, though, or maybe even more of Patterson.
I think the Washington Commanders might not even activate Gibson for this game. He's off the COVID list, but he's been hurt all year. And I could see.
Yeah, if he doesn't play at all, which totally wouldn't surprise me, there's not really obviously there's not. They have no chance of making the playoffs. There's no reason to play him. If you actually get four quarters, or we assume would be four quarters at Patterson, like he's straight up the starter. Yeah, at that point, I actually would be pretty interested in him because he also, I believe, was tied, if not led the team in backfield targets, as well as obviously led the team in carries. Yeah, I think he tied the rest of the team combined in backfield targets, if I remember correctly. Led the team in carries, was getting work in the red zone. It'd be against a terrible Giants team who cannot even sustain drives. At that point, if you guarantee me four quarters of Patterson, I'd actually be very interested.
Yeah, so it's Jarrett Patterson and then Jake Fromm and cash, right?
I think
one of these race to the bottom cash, is that a thing? Race to the bottom cash?
Jake Fromm might have scored negative points. Right, Jake Fromm? Not quite. He would have been like just over 1 point as one start, because I doubt he like rushed for much, and he had 25 yards and an interception, I believe. So like he's very live to get you negative. You might just want to take a guy who's not playing.
No, we're doing it's Jake Fromm. Then we're getting John Taylor in there. We're getting Austin Eckler in there. We're getting Cooper Kupp in there, folks. Jake Fromm leading us to the promised land.
The promised land.
The land of no cash for Jake Fromm.
Your face quickly went from excited, happy about it to like, actually, you know what? I'm disappointed in this. This is kind of bad.
He was
the promised land.
He was ashen at the promised land. And that was I gotta be honest, it's kind of elite, the promised land, even though it was also painful. And, yeah. It was elite. Well, we're off to the promised land. The show is over, folks. We'll be back.
How is Zach Wilson the best quarterback in New York with a bullet?
Anything, what do we got? So Kyle, yeah, that was good to pump Kyle's article earlier, Kring. That is a really important resource this week, the motivation factors. Check that out. You're still posting the walkthrough, correct? Still posting some paired back rankings. Still a lot of great content at the site. We'll be back with part two of our preview show tomorrow with myself, Matt Straub, Denny Carter, and John Daigle. Enjoy this final week of regular season football. For Patrick Corain, for Kyle Dvorchak, I am Patrick Daugherty. We will catch you later.
Doers, mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.